Okay, we're ready.
Give me your eyes for just 1 second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see.
Hi, welcome to Life Matters. This is Mariah Wilde, your host, and we have a very special inside look at foster care. We're also going to be talking about adoption, too, this time together. So I want to welcome back our special guest, April. And April was in foster care between the ages of 13 and 18. And she's sharing with us her story. And, you know, our purpose today is to really give you and pray that your heart will become a heart of true compassion. Because even though April is now an adult, unfortunately the things that she went through are things that children are going through every day. And these are similar to some of the stories and children that we have already found homes for, children that we will be asked to find homes for. And so our prayer is that if you're listening, that yes, we want you to have compassion, but then we want you to say to God, God, what action would you want me to take? Because compassion without action is worth nothing. We can feel compassion and, oh, wow, these children need homes. But if you don't do anything about it, what effect has that really had? Now, I can say that every single one of our listeners, there's something you can do that's really important. And that doesn't cost you anything. It doesn't take a tremendous amount of time. And that is to pray. And I don't say that lightly. Oh, we really, if you would pray for us every day and say, oh God, would you help Family Link find homes for these children? And then pray for our families, our parents, that they would have great wisdom to raise these children. Pray for those that make decisions, judges and caseworkers, decisions about the children's lives. We really, really would appreciate your prayers, and that's something that your compassion can lead you into really praying for us. And it would really mean a lot to me if you are going to commit to praying for us every day, or, you know, several times a week. If you email me and tell me, I'm like, oh, that's exciting. And we are putting together a prayer list so we know, you know, our families have somebody to call on if somebody is sick, or, you know, they just like some extra prayer. We have to be careful with confidentiality, but you certainly can pray for us, even if we don't give you, you know, really big details. So that's one thing you can do. The other thing I want to bring up is that we do have our next training classes July 10th and 17th. It is not too late to register. We invite you, even if you're just going, I don't know if I can be a foster adoptive parent, I might want to be a mentor, but at the very least, I'd like to learn more about what you do and figure out how I can help. Well, you are certainly invited. Email me and we'll send you an invitation, or you can do that through our website, familylinkkids.com. And then we also have our next pastor's luncheon coming up in July. So all kinds of ways you guys can help and put your compassion to action and help us help kids. So, all right, April, back to you. I want to just make sure if somebody had their heart touched, they knew what to do about it. and like, otherwise, what are we doing? We're not doing it for fun. We're doing it to help the next set of children and the ones we already have. And so, okay, so there you are. Really, wow, going through a very hard time. As you put it, great dark. And feeling really alone. And one thing God says, he says, I will set the lonely in families. Mm-hmm. And you know, he did that for you. He placed you in a family and you were lonely. And our children, I guarantee you, those all children who are abused and neglected, they're lonely. You know, their little hearts are not being cared for. And so we want to help God. We want to partner with him to fulfill that promise. We want to set the lonely, place the lonely in family so they'll not be lonely again. So tell us how that happened for you.
Well, it just happened where I actually got sent to school one day, and my sister's father came and picked me up and took me to the agency, and in this room with this really big conference table, that's what you call it.
That's right. Like,
every now and then, you just kind of forget. Teflon brain syndrome right there. Just nothing sticks.
Exactly. I totally know.
But yeah, and I just remember my mom being there crying, my brother and little sister being there, and somebody just came to me and said, you know, your mom just isn't able to take care of you right now, so we're going to put you in a different home. And so that's really the day that it happened, or how it happened that day. I'm sure that it's been working up to that, but I don't really know the behind the scenes of who reported or who called in, or, you know, I know bits and pieces, but I know that it was really a collective effort from a lot of people to kind of make it happen.
And I know when they said your mom can't take care of you, you're like, really? I think I've known that probably about 12 years, but thanks. Thanks for finally getting around to helping me. But I'm so glad they did. And you shared with us about Molly, your foster mom, your one and only foster mom, which is really fantastic. And give us a few highlights of your life with her. And while you're doing it, maybe you could, you know, really try to remember some of the things that she did for you that you would really want to, or things maybe she told you, did for you, that our perspective, maybe people considering being foster or adoptive parents, might also want to do, or to look, how can they learn from Molly through your child's perspective or teenager's perspective?
Well, thank you. I think, you know, honestly, I think Molly would be a wonderful poster child for foster parents, because she's just amazing. You know, when I moved in with her, she really gave me a chance to be a kid. You know, she knew that I had responsibilities and that I felt a great burden. And even though, a great burden for my family, and even though she never really approached me and said, hey, I'm the parent and you're the kid here, like, she didn't do that, because I think I would have felt really degraded at that point as a teenager.
Yeah, well, I think you can say it, but not that way. You'd have to say it in a way like, I want you to have the opportunity to be a child or to be a teenager, and the great news is you don't have to worry about certain things. But you're right. If you just said it, look, which sometimes parents not trained might do that and go, you know. So I think for our parents listening, if they have this situation, we want to make sure that, yes, you can have a conversation. You just have to be really the way you approach it is be very gentle and in such that the child or teenager actually feels relief afterwards. The good news is, I'm going to change the diapers, or I'm going to be getting the food, but you can be my helper, and you never have to worry about finding food or if somebody's going to get up with the baby during the night, or, you know, I will definitely take care of that, but I appreciate your help. And so those are some things that parents can say, and you almost always do have to the older siblings, because they pretty much always feel responsible. So go ahead.
Yeah, she just ended up, in a way, taking so much of that burden, like you're talking about, you know, like not having to worry about changing the diapers or doing this or that on the physical part. But then also, I just remember looking back and feeling like I didn't have to make my family stick together. Like, I had always felt like I was what kept my family together. And after foster care, I definitely felt that way. But while I lived with Molly, I felt like she really took on a lot of that burden for making sure that the family kind of stayed together, that my siblings and I saw each other, and that, you know, we related to my grandparents, and all these different facets that once I was out of foster care and I had to be doing on my own, I realized what a gift she had given me from the age of 13 to 18, being the one to do that, you know?
Yes, that's really important. And so then, when you were in foster care, you actually were available for adoption, but that was not something Molly really wanted to pursue. She chose to do permanent managing conservatorship, which is different. Will you kind of explain the difference from your perspective, what might have been different one way versus the other?
Sure, and please fill in the gaps.
Sure. Well, you're speaking from your experience, so it's going to be, whatever you say is going to be true, because it's your experience.
thank you. with permanent foster care, it's the guarantee that they're going to keep you until you are either 18 or 21, whichever point you decide to leave foster care. They're going to be the parent there for you and in charge of you up till that point. But then at that point, you're actually considered an independent adult and you're on your own. Now, adoption is obviously different than that, in that they're your family regardless. You know, if you're 19 and you're still not ready to go off to college, they're still probably taking care of you at home and working out the details and stuff.
Exactly. And it's different. You know, sometimes, in fact, I remember when I first became a foster parent at 21, I heard about PMC versus adoption, and I thought, well, I guess it's pretty much the same if the foster parent has the commitment. Because, see, we were asked for our first foster daughter. She was 10. And right now she'd be considered specialized, but at the time they had levels. She was a level 4, and she'd been in 15 homes. There I was, 21, and she had enuresis, encapresis, ODD, this and this and this and this and this. I really didn't have any idea what all that meant, which is not a good thing for the agency that placed her. And I said, sure, that sounds great. And then I found out what all that meant after she moved in. But still, we were committed to her. We loved her. And I remember her caseworker coming to us and saying, would you be willing to commit to Brenda with PMC, permanent managing conservatorship, even though I was only 21 and my husband at the time was like 24. Or 25. And so I said, yes, even after she started doing all that stuff and just acting out, basically she was acting out her hurts. And we said yes. But then she ended up being adopted by a couple who was older, which is probably a good thing, and could not have children. And they ended up moving to California. And so everything really worked out great for her. But I found out really about PMC when I was 21 because of that situation. And at the time, I thought that would probably be pretty much as good as adoption. But now I understand that it's really not. It's better than regular foster care, because you are at least making a commitment to keep them through foster care. But if you really want to make a lifetime commitment to somebody, then you adopt them and you give them your name. They're a part of your family. They're a part of your will. I mean, they truly become your child legally. And all children deserve that, and teenagers. They deserve to be a part of a family legally, not just good enough to be there for a while, but good enough to be part of their family forever. So I've actually learned now that it's not a good substitute for adoption, that if you cannot live with your biological parents and they cannot take care of you, then you need to be legally and emotionally forever attached to somebody. So you are somebody's. And I think that you, having gone the PMC route, you probably completely agree. Is that right?
Oh, I do. I mean, you know, the permanent foster care route is definitely a lot better than the system that they had before, where kids would get bounced all the time to different homes. But, you know, I thought, my young teenage mind heard permanent foster care, and it meant Molly was going to be my mom forever.
Right.
And
you'd
I was
think.
So excited. Yeah. And then 18 came, and all of a sudden I had to be on my own, and I didn't have that home really to go back to. And it, you know, part of it was just the circumstances of the time. It wasn't necessarily Molly's fault or anything. But it was just, it was devastating. It shook me at the core. It really did.
So what happened? So share with us. So you were turning 18, and so you thought, okay, I'm not ready to live on my own, and frankly, I don't think many 18-year-olds are, so I'd like to be able to stay. But so what? Who told you you couldn't? How did that happen?
Well, there's just a series of events that took place, but one of the things, you know, I heard at 18 that I'm going to be on my, you know, I'm going to be an independent adult, and I was really an independent person anyway, so I was thinking, yay, I can be more, like, independent, woo-hoo. But in the back of my mind, I always thought, but, you know, I can always come back to my room at Molly's, I can always, you know, all these things, and
like I'm a part of the family, so, you know, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And what ended up happening is, you know, when I graduated high school, I just really didn't feel ready. I didn't even want to leave my hometown. I was like, no, I don't even want to go to college. I just want to be here.
Which, because you hadn't had a home for that long, so you're like, I'm still soaking in having a family. I haven't had it actually for 18 years. I've actually only had a solid family for 5, and that's maybe not quite long enough. So we're going to hear the rest of the story when we come back. Y'all are listening to Life Matters on The Word, 98.5 and 99.3. If you want to try something that I'm using, check out mariahwilde.com. There are different things, so one's for pain, one's for mental energy, which I need that one because I'm going nonstop, and then one's for sleep. I'm so exhausted, I actually don't need the sleep one. But so check that out. It's mariahwilde.ciara.com. We'll be right back.
Give me your eyes for just 1 second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond.
Okay, we're ready.
Give me your eyes for just 1 second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see.
Welcome back to Life Matters. This is Mariah Wilde, and I appreciate you being with us. We have a very special night tonight with April Zlatnik, and April's sharing with us really an inside story of her life as a foster daughter. And then we're moving now into, the over 18 part, which I don't really think that's fully adult. In fact, my own daughter who turned 18, I said, by the way, since you cannot legally drink alcohol, I mean, the topic wasn't even about alcohol, but my point was, you're really not all the way an adult. You're kind of in between. If you were truly an adult, then you'd be able to drink alcohol at 18. So I think that really, adulthood happens after 21, which really doesn't mean that you don't need your parents. I mean, I'm older now, older than I was, and I still talk to my mom and dad and get advice and say, well, this is what's going on with maybe my own children or health-wise. My mom knows everything about health. And you know, we need our parents for our entire lives. But when you're 18, I just don't think you're quite an adult just because you can vote. Which I think you probably should be 21 just because what do you know when you're 18 or 19? So I completely understand that there you were 18 and going, I'm really just kind of getting into the groove of having this family and having someone, take care of me, even though you were independent. It's a wonderful feeling to have a home and a family and not have all those worries about bills and food. And you'd already been through that. You actually did it backwards. You did all that as a child. So I can totally understand that. I don't think most 18-year-olds, including my own, are ready, but certainly if you've not had that your whole life, it's like, hang on, I'm just kind of really getting to enjoy this. And so that must have been...
Really love the stability. When you are a kid who gets a family, you just love the stability. And I think you really love it the most when it suddenly disappears and you're like, oh, that's what it was.
Yes. And so what happened then? So you turned 18 and did you have to like pack up your room and everything?
I did, but just put the boxes in the garage for the time. And then I actually had a pretty special circumstance where I decided that I just wasn't ready to go straight to college. It just was too scary for me. So I ended up going to Ghana, West Africa for 5 months and doing community service instead. And that was through an exchange agency. And I got pretty much a full-ride scholarship to go through there. And it was... really, like, for me, it was the perfect transition because it was still being in a family setting over there, but being more independent, you know, getting my courage up, I guess you could say, and then coming back. And when I came back, it just that's when things started changing a lot. And when I came back, even though I could come and stay in, like, the guest room and stuff, it wasn't my room.
And you hadn't had a room most of your life, so that was probably really, really challenging and kind of hard not to have your room.
Yeah. Well, more than anything, it just felt like all of a sudden I didn't fully belong anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the part that was really hard, and I just remember, trying to be strong, but I just remember there was like a day that I went and cried and just cried and cried and cried because it was like, I wanted to still belong, and in my mind, it was supposed to be this one way, but all of a sudden, it's not, and having to adjust to reality wasn't an easy adjustment to make.
So let's talk a little bit more about the Ghana. So when you're, and that, I think when we talked before, not on the show, you mentioned that in a way being, first of all, being used in a ministry, but then also being out of the country was helpful in the sense because you had to separate, you had to leave that home, which, once again, if somebody was adopted generally, you wouldn't have to, which was a big difference. But it was helpful being out of the country because you were able to focus on something totally different, and it's not like, they're just down the road, how come I can't be there tonight? That doesn't make any sense, and it wouldn't make any sense to me either. So tell us a little about what did you do in Africa, and what was that like?
It was a really neat experience. Out of the 5 months, I spent about 2 months in a village that was almost on the border of Cote d'Ivoire in Ghana. And I just taught regular sixth grade English. And then for the remaining 3 months, I lived in the main city, the capital, Accra, and I taught street children basic math and English so that they could reintegrate into the school system.
Wow. So how, but if they were street children, who was putting them in school?
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this a question?
Oh, if they were street children and you were helping, going to help them integrate into school, like, was there an organization that was doing that?
Yes, there was. It was called the EMB Goodwill Foundation. And basically, these street youth were mainly kids whose parents were just so poor that these kids had to basically just walk on the street selling water or whatever else that they could. And so they didn't, for a number of years, just didn't have time to go to school. But in Ghana, you can actually be in the school system until you're like 21 or 22. And you don't have to be at a set age group for each grade. And so you would have, you know, maybe like 11-year-olds who were just having to go back into first grade or second grade, but being able to equip them to go back and not get totally lost when they go.
Right. So that was really neat. You took that in a way that many would feel is somewhat of an abandonment and a rejection, but you turned it around and helped these children who were even worse off than you had been, at least most recently. So that must have been a very, very rewarding and in a way to kind of be able to not think about your own personal circumstances quite as much.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think any time you can take a situation where you feel rocked and shaken and turn it around and say, you know, let me focus on helping someone else. It just, it relieves you of the stress of your own situation.
Yes.
But it also gives you the courage to deal with what you have to go through.
That's so powerful. You know, that in my parents who really modeled a life of ministry, a life of open doors. I remember a single mom living with us even before they became foster parents, and most of you know my story, but I went to them and said, do you know there are children that don't have homes? And they were like, well, yes. I said, well, what are we doing about it? So they became official foster parents when I was about 14, but they were doing kind of non-official. Different people would live with us. I remember a single dad lived with us and his son, a single mom and her son, a pregnant girl lived with us. And, you know, even as a child and a teenager, that required some sacrifice and kind of some character building on my part. And people a lot of times say, well, I wonder how this is going to affect my children. I just go, well, it's not, things can affect you really well and build your character that don't necessarily feel good all the time. So I remember this pregnant girl, like, taking some of my clothes, and I'm like, how on earth? I'm 15 years old. I don't really know how you think my clothes will fit you. Maybe she was thinking after the baby. She was about 19. And just taking stuff from my room, like my makeup and things like that, and sitting in the front seat with my car. And I'm the oldest daughter, so anytime, like a single mom or this pregnant girl, she would usually sit in the front, which is appropriate, but it was a displacement. But you know what? That was character building. It was building character that it's okay. So if she takes my makeup, well, good. I should have given it to her then if she wanted it, you know? And if they're going to sit in the front seat, fantastic. Then I can sit in the back seat. And so it taught me as a child and as a teenager to not be so selfish, to really care about others, and to be willing to give of whatever I had as a young girl, as a teenager, whether it be my space, my place in the family, you know, my place in the car. and then that equipped me then at 21 to begin this other life of ministry. And so it's important for those who are listening, thinking, I wonder how it's going to affect my children. Well, it doesn't mean they're going to like it every day if somebody takes their toys or does things or is throwing a two-hour tantrum. And who wants to listen to that? And your kids and your teenagers probably don't. But it's character building. You begin to have it's not about you anymore, and you begin to love and care about other people. And it's okay if it inconveniences you, and it's okay if it's a pain, and it's okay if they take your things, because it's not about you anymore. And that's something that's really important that we have to grasp. And so my parents had this picture, and the phrase said, attend to others, and happiness will come and sit quietly on your shoulder.
What a beautiful phrase.
Yeah, and that what you said is really a version of that, which made me think of the rest. Yes.
Well, true, and what happiness, you said about that character building and learning that it's not about you and learning to really think about others, I think that, you know, it really equips like foster care can equip the foster siblings who are taking yes. in this child or children
yes.
to really like have a head start in life in a lot of ways. I mean, yes. you were able to, in a way, mature, but mm-hmm. still have your childhood. And that seems like a really important goal for parents to have, is help their children mature in certain ways, but still give them their childhood. Whereas sometimes I think it's easy when kids don't have those character building experiences mm-hmm. to have their childhood but not mature, and then not mature, and then not mature. And then they get into like a situation when they're in their 20s and they're having to suddenly do all this maturation process, and it can be mm-hmm. so much harder.
Yes, exactly.
Especially when you don't have someone to fall back on.
And you can be in a wonderful family and grow up and be very selfish. and I have a funny story to tell you about that teenager. She was the one that was 19, and I was probably about 14, or she might have been 20. I don't remember. But so she was planning on placing a baby for adoption, and she was living with us until she had the baby and got situated. And my mom was supposed to be her birth coach. And so my mom, though, also because my dad was in law school at the time, she babysat other children to kind of help with income in the afternoon, like an after school child care with her own kids, my younger siblings. And so she said, I was 14. Oh, Mariah, you need to go to the hospital with Tara. Will you just help her get comfortable, and then I'll come as soon as all these moms come, and I'll start calling and, you know, getting all her children she was babysitting and my own sisters situated. I said, okay. So there I go. I had actually been to my mom's birth of my brother. So here I am with this girl who was frightened, her first baby, very frightened. I'm 14. And it must have been a very busy day, because the nurses hardly ever came in. So she is squeezing my hand. I'm saying, you've got to breathe. And then finally she said, the baby's coming. And I went and I said, get the doctor in here now. And he was so taking his time. The funny thing is, I've met him later. It was Dr. Elliot Trester. And he was slowly putting his gloves on. And I looked at him. I said, you need to hurry up. I'm not delivering the baby. Get in there and deliver the baby.
So I met him.
Yes. And I met him years later. And I said, you know what? This is funny. But I was your assistant at a birth years and years ago. And he thought, yeah. I was like, I bet you remember if you think about it. So there I was with, at the time, this girl I didn't like terribly much, because I was still in the character building process and she was doing things to me. But that was definitely a bonding experience. And later she'd like, I can't believe you're my birth coach. And I'm like, I really can't believe it either. But you know what? I became an apprentice for a midwife at 18 and began helping deliver babies at 18 anyways. So that was a good start.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've delivered babies for years. So isn't that funny? So if my parents had, you know, who knows, if they hadn't brought her into our family, and then we were able to minister to her, you know, help her with the baby. Yeah, there's just many things happen because we say yes to God. And then it changed her life, but it also changed my life and probably put me in an interesting direction. And I've worked with pregnant girls in crisis situations as well as healthy women for years now. And
wow.
And, yeah. And I was
That's really cool. So does that mean you're going to be my birth coach?
I am a great one, I have to say. I certainly can be.
Well, I'm in the market for down the road.
Awesome. Then I will definitely help you. There's all kinds of things you can do to help the pain naturally, which is something that you will want to know about. So you guys have been listening to Life Matters on the Word 98.5 and 99.3. We will be right back. If you're interested in contacting us and following up with us, friend me on Facebook, Mariah Wilde Family Link. We'll be right back.
Give me your eyes for just 1 second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see.
Okay, we're ready. So we have about 12 minutes. Is that right? About 13. Okay, I'm looking at the clock. Oh, okay. Okay, sounds good. We're ready.
Give me your eyes for just 1 second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach.
Welcome back to Life Matters. This is your host, Mariah Wilde, and I'm so glad to be here with you tonight. And I'm visiting with April. We're just having a great time. And what's funny is at the beginning of every show, often, I mean, I have an idea of things that we want to cover, but you never know really what direction we're going to go into, which I think makes it more interesting. It's just, it's going to happen organically. And so we've kind of been talking lately about the effect of being a foster and adoptive parent on the children. And then, of course, we have the foster child's perspective with April, and then we have the foster sibling and foster parent's perspective with mine. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, triangle, because all the pieces are really important. The foster child, the siblings, and how they respond and react, as well as the foster parents. And it's such an amazing family ministry. And I mentioned earlier, if you're just joining us, which some people do at the very end, some people say, as soon as I get the kids down or out of the bath, then I turn it on. But something that's changed my life forever has been that quote, attend to others and happiness will come and sit quietly on your shoulder. So in this world, we all think, if I have this, I'll be happy. If I marry this person, I'll be happy. If I get this car or this job or this, I'll be happy. And you know what? What comes naturally to you and what you think in your mind and what the world thinks creates happiness, or whether it be money or things or even relationships, that's not it. True happiness comes when you're walking in the destiny, when you're walking in ministry. And to really sum it up, true happiness comes when you're serving others, when you're not even thinking about yourself. If you're thinking about what's going to make you happy, I can tell you it won't work and you'll be unhappy. And if you're even thinking about your own happiness, you will be unhappy. So thinking about yourself and like, am I happy? Well, probably not. But if you think about others and say, is that person happy? How can I help that person who I see at Sun Harvest, who seems really sad and who's kind of has some tears coming out of her eyes? We have to look around you every single day. If you are actually aware and say, God, here's my life. Take it. Take me to the least of these. And whether it means going to Africa, whether it means being a foster or adoptive parent, at least it could mean being aware of your neighbors, people you work with, and those that are going through a trauma or sadness, you know, just putting your arm around them and saying, how can I help you? How can I pray for you? You know, God has a great plan for you. It's amazing. When you start looking around, you can do ministry every single day, no matter if you work at a bank or an insurance company or McDonald's. You can be a minister of God's compassion and love every day. And when you do that, it'll be shocking. That's when you can check in ministry off like a week later and go, am I happy? And the answer will be yes. And so I know that you've also learned that in your life. You have been a servant, April, from you were serving your brother, your sister, your mom. Then you're serving in Ghana. And so share with us some of the life lessons you've learned even since, you know, becoming an adult. What are some things that you could impart that you've learned to some of our listeners?
Oh, about becoming an adult?
Well, just anything. It's your time. Oh. Right now I'm asking you, what have you learned in life? What wisdom have you learned, you know, maybe through what you've gone through? What have you learned that you could pass on to others?
Wow.
That's a big one. I know. Just think of something.
That's a big question.
I know. Just throw a few things out there that come to your mind.
You know, honestly, one of the absolute biggest lessons I have learned in the last 5 years is just being obedient to the Lord. And I can't even begin to tell you, there is a section of my life that was so painful and so turbulent. And now that I look back on it, the Lord's been saying, now that I'm beyond it and able to look objectively, He's like, you know what, if you had just been obedient to me in these ways, that wouldn't have happened. It would have been a very easy, wonderful time of your life, but you weren't, so I had to withhold those blessings. So for me, that was just a huge, huge lesson, like, oh, okay, I'm gonna forgive that person when they hurt me. I'm gonna, you know, be nice to that person when they're mean to me. I'm gonna do these things that I don't want to naturally do because I want God's blessing in my life.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's important that we point out, it's not like He doesn't want to bless you, but if you're holding on to resentment, then you're just not going to be able to feel His blessing, so you don't feel very happy. And so forgiving others is kind of a basic thing, but a lot of people have a hard time doing it. But I like to tell them, look, you're not doing anything good for this person. It really doesn't even affect that person. You know who it affects is yourself. It's you're releasing that person of what they've done, but you're releasing them to God. And if they've done something really terrible, then they can experience God's wrath. And that's all right. We're okay if that happens, if they've done really, really bad things. But you're not.
You're like, Lord, why don't you come faster? Hello.
Well, it says something about keeps a cold fire on their head. So sometimes I'm like, that's all right for these really people who've done like really, really bad things, especially hurting children in a very bad way. But you're releasing, you're saying, I'm not going to try to get back at this person. I'm not going to hold that resentment in my heart against this person and hold on to this bitterness. Because when you do, it doesn't work. And I think sometimes people think, they don't deserve my forgiveness. It's like, well, guess what? It doesn't even affect them anyways. And it's really only affecting you. It's releasing you're right. They don't deserve it. But you're not doing anything for them anyways when you forgive them. You're actually just helping yourself releasing that holding it, and just to give it to God. Say, God, this person really hurt me, but I'm going to release them to you, and I'm not going to continue to hold it against them, and I'm not going to try to get back at them. I'm going to release it and move on. Because how can you be a minister of God's blessing, a minister of His grace to others, when you're really holding on to that? It's just not enough room in your heart for all this bitterness and resentment and anger when you're also trying to do great things in the world. And so I think to move into our destiny, you just have to, that's one important thing you've got to do. And then you can move into all the exciting things the world, that God has to offer you in this world. But that's
absolutely. And there's so much to live. There really is.
Yes, that's a good thing. We have a lot to accomplish and we're just getting started. Okay, so that's one. What else have you learned?
You know, I have learned that sometimes what you don't want is what you need. And that has been a really hard lesson to learn. But, you know, through it all, I've been learning, you know, what I wanted, what I thought I wanted in my life ended up, now I can look back on it and say, whoa, if I had gone that route, I could totally see how that would have been harmful or destructive, and how much wiser God has been to put me in this situation instead.
Yes.
And so that's been really cool, like realizing that, you know, God knows what we need and He also knows what we want. And, you know, sometimes He can give us both at the same time, and it's a big blessing, and sometimes He has to withhold one to be able to give us the other.
Yeah, it's kind of like with our own children. Or if as a parent you want to, in fact, in the Bible it says, if you ask me for a fish, am I going to give you a stone? You know, that's the same thing. If our children, if we can, we want to say yes. We want to bless them. But sometimes they want things that really aren't good for them and that's going to hurt them in the long run. And so, I just finally told my own kids, including teenagers, you might not understand. And guess what? You will when you're an adult. So this is going to be the way it's going to be. And if you feel like you just cannot understand it, that's okay. One day you will. But right now, you're going to have to trust that I'm making the right decision. And it's amazing how smart your parents, or might be somebody's foster or adopted parents, or the people who are investing in your life. It's really amazing how smart they become when you become an adult. You're like, oh my gosh, my parents know so much. Or your mentors, or your, you know, whoever it is that really meant something to you, especially when they're speaking to you as a teenager. So sometimes I do tell myself, oh, well, one day they'll know, you know, how much my advice is really worth. Because I didn't really know how incredible my parents' advice was until I got older and went, oh, you guys are really wise. And so and I'm looking forward to when they come to town. They're unfortunately in California, but I'm looking forward to you meeting them, April. And I also wanted to extend an invitation to you. If you end up being around on Saturday, we'd love for you to come and hang out with us at our swimming pool, barbecue, fun time, and get to visit some of the foster families. Yeah, and I bet some of the families who are listening will be there, and that'll be really fun. They might have some questions for you, and our listeners love to get to meet the special guest in person. So that'll be very fun. Hope to see you on Saturday as well. Thank you so much for all of y'all being with us tonight. I've just had a great time getting to know April more and sharing with you guys some of my personal stories. That's always fun. The little trip down memory lane. So, if remember, July 10th and 17th is our next training class. Please go to familylinkkids.com and email me if you'd like to become a volunteer, mentor, or, of course, foster to adoptive parent. Or if you're just going, I don't know how to help, but I do have a heart to help, we will help you get plugged in. Friend me on Facebook, Mariah Wilde Family Link. And if you want to try something that helps you get in your best shape possible so that you can go out and do all these incredible, great things and have energy to do so, check out mariahwilde.com. We will be back tomorrow night. God bless you. Help us help others.